Okay, we are left off last week discussing the pasuk. Yonasan, the son of Eviasar, is rushing to deliver some sort of news. The background, of course, is that Adonio was having this wonderful party, and the party was disturbed by noise. Usually it's the other way around. The people making the party are disturbing the neighbors. Here, the neighbors disturbed the party. There was noise. Yoav realized something was up, and but they didn't know what it was. And now they see Yonasan approaching. And the assumption that Adoniel makes is that he's coming to bring good news. Because he says, Ish chayel ata, the tov tivaser. We discussed several interpretations of Ish chayel ata. Before we proceed to the next pasuk, I would just like to share with you one additional interpretation. We mentioned Ish chayel means a brave person who tends to be optimistic, a yirei chet, who therefore would be zolcha to deliver good news, or generally a good person who wants to deliver good news. Another explanation of Ish chayel is chayel means vigorous, coming with enthusiasm, with excitement. And generally speaking, nobody wants to be the one to be the bearer of bad news, because it's not going to make you very popular. So if Yonasan is coming with energy and enthusiasm and excitement, he's rushing, he looks excited, Ish chayel, he's acting with vigor, so therefore Adoniel assumes he has something good to report. So Yonasan, hearing this assumption, answers and says, Vayan Yonasan vayomer Adoniel. And Yonasan answered and said to Adoniel, Avol, but Adonenu HaMelech David Himlech HaShlomo, our master, the king, David, has made Shlomo the ruler. Avol, but, what do you mean, but? So the simple pshat is, it's not as you say, but. And as you think, tov tevaser, no, I've got a surprise for you, avol, and not like you said, but rather, I've got bad news for you. That David HaMelech has made Shlomo the ruler. The question is, was Adoniel wrong in his assumption? Adoniel said that Ish chayel ata, whatever the explanation is, you're a rechet, you're a good person, brave person, you're coming with excitement, so you're going to give us good news. Well, if he was here to deliver what to Adoniel was the worst possible news, why was he coming with such excitement, and why was he the one volunteering to make that delivery? So the Rabbat points out a very, very important distinction. In general, the rule is, you know, you don't look for opportunities to deliver bad news. And in general, min hashamayim, good things come through good people and bad things come through bad people. But when you're delivering bad news in a situation where there's something to be done about it, that's not bad news. That's good news. You see, if Yonasan would not have told Adoniel what was happening, and Adoniel would have proceeded and continued with his party and perhaps gone even further than he had gone, he would have gotten himself deeper in the hole, and perhaps there would have been no escape. But by giving you timely information that you could act upon, in essence, that's really a good thing. And that's something that a good person should be eager to do with his rizus, and don't look at it like, oh, I'm delivering bad news. But it's bad news you could do something about. You know, in recent current events, everyone's been following the hurricanes. You know, there was a time not that long ago when you didn't get advance warning of hurricanes. And they talk about a hurricane that wiped out Galveston, I don't know, some 60 years ago, whatever it was. What? It's more than that even. So that hurricane came without advance warning. It didn't have the weather systems we have today. Nobody knew to escape. So it was pretty deadly. Today, you get advance warnings. They're not exactly accurate. You know, some people choose to ignore them. But the fact of the matter is, being told in advance a hurricane is coming is not bad news. It's bad news, but it's a good thing to be told in advance. You know, I used to live in hurricane zone. I know what happens because even today it's not an exact science, and a slight variation in the path of a hurricane can make a big difference. More than once, we canceled school because of a hurricane warning, and there was no hurricane. I remember one time, it was a beautiful day. The hurricane took a slight shift to the south and missed Miami. I came into school to do some work, and half the school was there playing football. They decided to meet up in the schoolyard to play football. When I showed up, they said, "You can't make us come inside. We're off today." But the point of the matter is, having a warning, having notice, where there is something to be done about it, is a good thing. Telling you bad news when there's nothing to be done about it, when it's too late, that's something that you shy away from. You don't want to be the one who has to deliver that message. But in a situation where there's still something to be done, which in fact we will see was done, so then it's a good thing to do. In the delivery, we discover, according to the Mepharshim, that Yonatan indeed was an Ishchayo and delivered the message in a very, very careful and appropriate way. The purpose of Yonatan's message was to make sure that Adoniel would abandon his attempt at the throne and reconcile with Shlomo. But he was not out there to cause pain to Adoniel, or for that matter to all the supporters of Adoniel, including his father. So you will see that he delivered this report with a lot of details. Some of these details we did not know before. They only come revealed in these psukim. They were not mentioned in the earlier psukim when the story was taking place. However, also, certain details were left out. And we'll discuss them as we go along, but the point was, every detail mentioned was designed to close some type of escape hatch, so to speak, in Adoniel's thinking. Perhaps Adoniel will think, it's not so bad, I could do this, I could do that. So the message was delivered, don't think this, don't think that, etc. But those things that would only cause Adoniel pain, but weren't necessary to deliver the message, were left out. I would call it, you know, they have this expression, minimum force. You know, sometimes you have to use force, but you're expected to use the minimum force. The same thing is true with words. Words can be forceful and could be painful. So you have to say what you have to say, but use the minimum force that's going to accomplish your goal. So let's see what he said. The first line is, Abba Adonenu HaMelech David Himlech HaShlomo. Our master David has made Shlomo the ruler. It's interesting here for what he has said, and it's interesting here for what he has not said. What he said was, David made Shlomo the ruler, and he refers to David as Adonenu, our master, HaMelech, the king, implying to Adoniyahu that you realize that from the very beginning of your plan, you never intended to rebel against David. The intent of your revolution was to usurp Shlomo, was to undercut Shlomo, but not to fight against David. David is our master, your master as well as mine, as well as everyone else's. So now that David has very clearly weighed in on this issue, then you have no basis to continue the fight. There is no mention of the Nevuah, right, of Nathan HaNavi, because again, according to most Mepharshim, Adoniel knew about that, but it isn't really relevant in the message, and that would only create Agmas Nefesh in Adoniyahu, where it wasn't really delivering a message. Goes on to describe Pasuk Mem Dalid, Vayishach Ito HaMelech, and the king has sent along with Shlomo as Tzadok HaKohen, Tzadok the Kohen, Nasan HaNavi, V'Nayahu Ben Yoyada, V'Kresi V'Plesi. We explained before a lot of different interpretations who the Kresi Plesi were. V'Yarkiva Asa Pridat HaMelech. So here we have the guest list, right? Who went along with Shlomo? The point of this was that Shlomo is not alone. He has very important people. There's a formidable leadership team. So don't think that you could out-strategize him, out-maneuver him, you get support. He could go toe-to-toe with you. You have Yoav, and you have Eb Yasser. He has Tzadok, he has Binayahu, he has Nathan HaNavi. if you choose to try to engage in some kind of struggle, he has plenty of people on his side. It's not a good idea. And the crazy and the pricey. So this was a message. Again, that this demonstrates that he was publicly announced as a king and done by David, because no one would have the chutzpah to ride on the Pirdas HaMelech without David's consent. This will be amplified further as the psukim continue. Vayimshu also Tzadok HaKohen. Tzadok HaKohen was Moshechim V'nosan HaNavi L'melech B'gichon V'yalu Misham Tzmechim, and they left there happy. V'tehom HaKirya, and the whole city was in tumult, was in an uproar. Hu hakol asher shematan, that is the sound that you have heard. This also delivers two very important messages. Number one, that the people support Shlomo. One could be tempted to think, all right, listen, David wants Shlomo, and he's got a couple of the elites, the leaders, the Tzadok HaKohens and the Benayahus and people like that, okay? But I've got the grassroots. I'll get the Hamonam, and all of a sudden I'll become a very democratic, populist leader, and we'll see. Maybe I could win the struggle. So don't think so, because Vayalu Misham Semechim Vatem Akiria, the people are very happy with this choice, and they're supporting Shlomo. So you will not have the upper hand in the leadership, and you will not have the following of the Hamonam, of the masses. So therefore, there is no avenue to continue the struggle. Another important message delivered is, and it's continued in the next pasuk, is that this is not a future appointment, but a present one. We did discuss in the past whether Shlomo technically was a king. Perhaps he was not. However, he was already Mashuach LaMelech, and he already assumed certain prerogatives of being the king, and therefore it's a done deal. If this would have been a message for the future, a lot of things could happen in between. And you could figure, perhaps we could maneuver, we could struggle, we could do this, we could do that, who knows? It looks bad today, but it may look good tomorrow. But since it's a done deal, it's really too late to take action to do anything. And therefore, you need to give up. This brings to mind, we keep on finding parallels to the story of Esther, Haman and Ahasuerus, Esther, and there's a parallel here too. In the famous drinking party, right? Esther invites Ahasuerus and Haman to this party. Actually, it ended up being two parties. She wasn't ready to act on the first one. Why did she invite Haman to that party? And the Gemara discusses a number of reasons why she did it, and the Maskon of the Gemara is that they were all true. They were all part of her cheshbon. One of the reasons she invited Haman to the party was that Haman should not have any time to regroup. Haman will be there at the time that Esther reveals herself. Hopefully Ahasuerus will get angry at him and take action, and Haman won't have a chance to maneuver. If Haman would not be at the party and they have to send for Haman, that's already a delay. And as long as there's a delay, who knows, things could change, you could come up with something, this could happen, that could happen. Esther wanted to ensure that there would be no delay. And this is really the message that Yonasan is saying now to Adoniyahu. If he would have made an announcement in 3 weeks from Tuesday, we are going to appoint Shlomo as the king, and everyone cheers and claps, and they have the same crowd and the same audience and the same Bnei Yahu and Nasan and Navi and Tzadok and Matam Kalir. So Adoniyahu could think, right now the polls are up, tomorrow the polls will be down. And I think it wasn't that long ago they said that Mike Bloomberg had the lowest approval rating in the history of polling in New York City. And now he's got a huge lead. I don't know, it's going to be in November. But the fact of the matter is, things change. So, but if he was already appointed, it's much harder to undo that which was already done. By the way, here too, something was left out. When the people were semechim and acknowledged the appointment of David HaMelech to Shlomo, they said, Yechi HaMelech Shlomo. That was mentioned in the earlier pasuk. That was left out of Yonasan's speech because the point was made without it. And again, minimum force. To highlight that particular factor would only cause agmas nefesh to Adon Yoh and wouldn't really enhance the message that Yonason was delivering. He continues. Pasuk Memhei. We're actually up to Pasuk Mem Vav. The Gam Yashav Shlomo Al Kisei HaMelucha. This is the continuation of that thought that it's already a done deal. That not only was he Moshe HaMelech, but he actually sat on the throne and took, which I assume is more than just a symbolic act, it probably means that Shlomo already was taking over the apparatus of government. This becomes somewhat clearer at the end of the parak, when Adoniel abandons his efforts and comes to reconcile. So Shlomo is the one who sends for Adoniel, not David, and he comes and bows before Shlomo. So Shlomo already was taking action as a ruler or whatever exactly his status was. So therefore, again, to emphasize the fact that there's no time, it's already over. The Gam Ba'u Avdei HaMelech, right, the next two psukim are here to deliver another aspect of the message, which is that this move has the complete and enthusiastic support of David HaMelech. We already know from the fact that he said Adonai HaMelech David HaMelech HaShlomo, and he wrote on the king's donkey that it was with David's consent, but there are different degrees of consent. You know, David could have been persuaded, could have been pressured even by Bathsheba, by Nathan, by others, and reluctantly gone along with it and said, okay, we'll do it. But his heart was not in it. And if that would be the case, then Adoniel could still harbor the thought that perhaps I could get a hold of David and get him on my side. This would be certainly conceivable in the mind of Adoniel, according to one interpretation we had earlier in the parak. If you recall, near the beginning of the parak, the pasuk points out that David never spoke harshly, never made Adoniel sad, spoke harshly. And what was the point of that? So there were two interpretations. One interpretation was that was the cause for Adoniel, so to speak, to become spoiled, if you will, to a certain extent, and to feel that he was great, and that's what caused him to think that he was right to be the king. But according to another interpretation, it was part of Adoniel's strategy. Since he saw that David had a soft spot for him, he figured he'd like to take advantage of that and make sort of proclaim himself as a king while David's alive, with the hopes that David won't do anything and people would take that as a consent to his rule. It didn't work out like that, but he could still feel, listen, David has a soft spot for me. And if he was being pressured into this decision, if he's not so enthusiastic about it, maybe I could change his mind. So the pasuk, next psukim, reveal that David was very much behind this and very enthusiastic about it. So pasuk mem zayin, the gam ba'u avdei hamelech, the servants of the king came, levarech es adoneinu hamelech David, to bless our master the king David, lemar saying, Yetev Elokecha Hashem Shlomo Mishmecha Elokayach Hashem Shlomo Elokim, I'm sorry, Yetev Elokim Hashem Shlomo Mishmecha, may Hashem cause the name of Shlomo to be better than your name, V'gadol Et Kiso Mikisecha, may his throne be greater than your throne, V'yishtachu HaMelech Al HaMishkaf, and the king bow down on his bed. So we see that they said such things to David. David would not have accepted, they wouldn't have dared say such a thing unless they saw that David was really enthusiastically behind this. Interesting, we have here a little detail that we did not get in the original story. The original story, we had Benayahu saying that your kisei Shlomo should be greater than kisecha. We do not have the expression shame Shlomo Mishmecha. Apparently he must have said both, but the pasuk only revealed it here. What is the difference between shame and kisei? The Mefarshim explain that shame refers to personal accomplishments Kisei refers to what you might say governmental or political accomplishments. When you say Kisei Shlomo should be greater than Kisei David, that means the power of the king, the power of Kal Yisrael, the political accomplishments of Shlomo should be greater. When you say shame, it means his personal reputation. Of course, we know that Shlomo developed a reputation for his chachma, for his wisdom, that was even greater than David's. Shlomo was a chacham b'kol adam. I'm sure David was no slouch, but it was Shlomo who had that reputation. So both in a personal sense and in a political sense, they were giving the bracha that Shlomo should be greater. And as we said before, a father is not jealous of his son, and therefore it was something that David HaMelech was happy to hear and hopeful that would come true. When we say Vayishtachu HaMelech al HaMishkov, that David HaMelech bowed down on his bed, that was a sign of gratitude to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This should ring a bell. We do find somebody else bowing down on his bed as a sign of gratitude to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, also involving interaction with his son, and that's Yaakov Avinu. When Yosef agreed to swear to take his body to Eretz Yisrael, it says Vayishtachu Arosh Hamita, Yaakov Arosh Hamita. Now, if we analyze it a bit further, I think we will see the parallel. And by the way, I believe it was the Radak who mentions this parallel, that the parallel is more than just a similar choice of words or a similar way of expressing gratitude, but it was really a similar gratitude. Because we know why Yaakov bowed Arosh Hamita. Rashi over there tells us that Yaakov harbored apparently a fear, a worry about Yosef. Yosef underwent two enormous challenges in life. Number one, he was kidnapped and taken away from his father's home at the age of 18, still relatively young. And by the way, Derech Agav, there's an interesting Mefarshim explained that Yosef, despite his superior learning abilities and superior intelligence, was in fact somewhat young and immature. And the Sefarno explains on the Pasuk, when the brothers were having trouble with Yosef and they were debating and discussing why they were having these problems, and they said it's because of our brother, Asher Roinu Tzaras Nafsho Bishanana Aleinu V'lo Shamanu. We saw the anguish that he was going in when he was pleading with us and we didn't listen. So Reuven answered them, Halo Amarti Al Techetu Vayeled V'gam Damo Hine Nidrash. Didn't I tell you not to sin with the child? And his blood is also being sought. And the Sefarno explains what was going on here. The brothers at this point still believed that they were justified in selling Yosef. Why? Because they thought Yosef was plotting a conspiracy against them. Yosef was bringing reports to Yaakov. Yosef was doing certain things to make them look bad in order that they should be kicked out and Yosef will take over the future of Kal Yisrael. So they viewed him as a rodef, as somebody who was conspiring against them. And in self-defense, they felt that they were allowed to get rid of him. What was the sin then? It was the fact that we ignored his pleading. It's not really what we did, but he was begging with us, he was pleading with us, Ishana Elena, we were harsh, we were callous. And that was the sin. But not that our decision was wrong. What should they have done if they wouldn't have been so harsh and callous? I'm not sure. Maybe they would have spared him, maybe they would have found some other way to get rid of him that wouldn't have been so harsh. But that was the sin, not the decision. So Reuven answered and said, you're making a mistake. You believe that he was a conspiracy because since he was so brilliant and he was so smart, so you figured that everything he did was part of a plan. But I got to tell you, he was a yeled. A yeled usually refers to a young child. He was 18. You wouldn't call an 18-year-old a yeled. But he called him a yeled. A person who is immature doesn't look ahead. They take things one thing at a time. So a series of unrelated events that you put together in a string, if indeed they were a string, you'd be right. It was a conspiracy and you'd be 100% justified in what you did. But I'm telling you that Yosef, despite his brilliance, and he seemed to be so knowledgeable, but he was still only a yelet. And it wasn't a conspiracy. Each event was separate, was not connected to the other. And therefore, gam damo hine nidrash. It's not just the Achzarias. His blood is also being sought. We had no right to do what we did. So this was the debate. So it's a tremendous challenge and a tremendous nisayon when you're still young and immature to be taken away from your father's house under such conditions and brought to the most decadent society of the time in Egypt and still maintain your tzitzkus and your righteousness. And of course we know the tremendous challenges that Yosef had to face. A second thing, Yosef became king, or viceroy to the king, de facto king, also at a relatively young age, at 30 years old. You know the saying, power corrupts, absolute power corrupts absolutely. So the fact that you have power, and pretty much absolute power, virtually absolute power, Paro could still overrule him, but Paro was a hands-off king, and Yosef did what he wanted. So that tends to corrupt people. And apparently both of these challenges are on equal footing, you know, because they list them together. So there was a certain fear in the heart of Yaakov that Yosef perhaps was influenced. And now that Yaakov saw that Yosef was indeed a tzaddik and indeed ra'i to be one of the shiftei kah, to be a son of Yaakov, he was yishtacha rosh hamita, as Rashi says, shemitaso shlema, that all his children were tzaddikim. This incident solidified in the mind and understanding of Yaakov Avinu that Yosef was indeed a tzaddik. In a similar way, I think this is what David was responding to, because David must have had a fear in his heart too. First of all, was the sin of Bathsheba truly forgiven? And did that sin have an influence on Shlomo? And although he promised that Shlomo would be king, is Shlomo really right to be king? Is Shlomo who he thinks he is? But when David HaMelech sees that everything is going smoothly, that his attempt to make Shlomo king worked, and that the people are following him and everyone is supporting him, it's a sign to David that Shlomo is right to be king. And this is what he was happy about. David wouldn't be happy about some personal thing. Oh, I want Shlomo, I got my wish. Right? David was far beyond that. That's not something that he would be thanking Hashem, I got my way. It's because David now realizes that it was correct, it was proper. He sees that Adonijah's times were not true, and that Shlomo was ready to be king, and my son is who I think he is. And therefore, David was grateful. Derech Agav, it's worthwhile to note in a little bit of a tangent, but as long as we're discussing Yaakov Avinu and Yosef, what exactly happened here that made Yaakov so sure that Yosef was a tzaddik? Obviously, Yaakov had other interactions with Yosef since he was reunited, and on its surface, it must have been pretty obvious that Yosef was a tzaddik. But the surface is only a surface. So Yaakov was worried about something deeper, something, you know, further down. What was demonstrated now that made Yaakov feel comfortable? What happened now was that Yosef agreed to swear that he would take Yaakov's body for kavura to Eretz Yisrael. Yosef didn't want to swear. Yosef said, I'll do as you say. And Yaakov had to repeat, Yishavali, swear to me. It's almost as if Yaakov Avinu is saying to Yosef, I don't trust you. Now here Yosef is doing everything for Yaakov. He's ready to be Moser Nefesh. And you come and tell me, I don't trust you. I want you to swear. So one would expect perhaps a certain hesitation, a certain annoyance, even if Yosef would agree to do it. This is where Yaakov could see the true nature of Yosef. Yosef responded without any compunctions. If this is what you want me to do, I'll do it. And that demonstrated that this was more than a superficial tzidkus. It went deep down. Why Taka did Yaakov want Yosef to swear? So the Ramban explains it's not because Yaakov didn't trust him. Yaakov did trust him. But he says two reasons. One is the more well-known reason, might be familiar with, that Yaakov anticipated that Paro may give Yosef trouble. And he figured if Yosef swore, it would give Yosef a much better excuse. And therefore, he'd be able to carry it out. And in fact, that is what happened. Because Paro didn't want Yosef to go. He was nervous, you know, that maybe they would leave and not come back. And he didn't want him to go. And Yosef said, "I swore to my father." Paro said, "Big deal. You know, shvuos I made to be broken." So Yosef said, "You know, I swore another shvuah. It seems there was a rule in Egypt that in order to be king, you had to be fluent in all the languages of the world. And Paro was fluent in all the languages of the world except one, and that was Hebrew. And Yosef knew that. So Paro made Yosef swear that he wouldn't tell anybody that Paro didn't speak Hebrew. So Yosef said, if shvuos are made to be broken, I don't have to keep the shvuah I made to my father, then I don't have to keep the shvuah I made to you either." And Paro said, "On second thought, maybe you should keep your shvuah." So this was a weapon, so to speak, in the hands of Yosef, a tool in the hands of Yosef, in case Paro gave him a hard time. The Ramban gives a second explanation. The Ramban says that sometimes a person may make an effort to do something and kind of give up, feel that they reached the end of the rope. If you made a shvua, then yitzarech li'amel yosef. You're going to have to work harder. So when obstacles come up and it becomes difficult to fulfill your commitment, the fact that you swore to do it will push the person to go further. Rosh Yeshiva explained that really there's a problem with this, and it needs a little bit further understanding. Because if you've really reached the end of your rope, you're putter from a shvua too. And if you swore to do something, but you're a mamish and anus, it was impossible for you to do it, then you're putter from your shvua. And if you did not reach the end of your rope, then you should have done it without a shvuah. And if Yosef indeed was not suspected, and Yosef was in fact such a great tzaddik, the mere fact that he told his father he would do it even without a shvuah should be sufficient to motivate Yosef to do the best he can. And if he was able to be, if it was actually Yosef, it was possible to work harder, then Yosef surely would have done it. And if it was not possible to work any harder, then the shvuah won't help. So what exactly was Yaakov expecting to accomplish? And the Rosh Yeshiva pointed out a very, very important concept in human nature. You know, we kind of look at our abilities and our capacities as being, I guess, somewhat static. And this is what I could do. I can't do anything more. But it's not really true. We have not only the capacity to do certain things, we have the capacity to expand our capacity. This happens sometimes. You will find that in a huge crisis, people are able to accomplish things they had no idea that they could accomplish. In some cases, even physical things. You know, they're able to lift things, to people get out of disaster, tragedy, they do things that seem impossible. A mother rescuing a child is able to lift up a heavy object she could never carry under other circumstances. You call it adrenaline, maybe it's adrenaline, determination, whatever you want to call it, but there's a capacity to increase our capacity. In Ruchnius, this is true as well. There could come a point where you really can't do anything more. You're a misamal as much as you could. But if there is something driving you a little bit harder, your capacity actually increases. And where if there would be no shvuah, and Yosef is fully committed to trying to keep his father's wishes, he might reach an obstacle that would stop him and would truly and really and actually stop him. Because he couldn't do any better than that. But now that he has the shvuah behind him, his capacity increases. I think this is my own extension, but I think that if you ever, you know, are familiar with stories of Gedolim and great people and things that they've accomplished, I'm not necessarily talking about, you know, the stories about how when they were 3 years old they knew Shas Bal Peh. But I'm talking about the real stories. I'm not saying they're not real, but people who accomplish in tzidkus and in greatness, and sometimes you could look at a story like that and in a certain sense even become discouraged. So I have no shyness to this. I can never do anything like that. And the probability is that it's somewhat true. That when you look at these stories, you really can't do anything like that. That's in our current state of being. But if you start working on things and you start trying to do and accomplish, and you become sufficiently motivated, your capacity increases. It's not a straight arithmetic line. It's geometric. My abilities, my powers increase. And how do you measure that? A person can never know what he could really do. You could at best judge your current abilities. But how could you judge what your future abilities might be? There's a famous story, and you'll forgive me for enhancing it a bit. I just can't resist when I get my hands on a good story. But the famous Netziv of Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, the Rosh Yeshiva of Volozhin in the end of the 19th century, and one of the leaders of Kal Yisrael, and he tells a story about himself. He doesn't give all the details, that's where I get to step in a bit. When he was a child, when he published his Sefer Hamek She'ela, he made a big su'uda and to celebrate the publication of this Sefer, and this is what he said at that su'uda, and it's recorded in the Akdama. That when he was a child, he was not really doing that well in Cheder. I don't know if you're familiar with the way things went on in Europe at that time. It's not quite the way sometimes we think of it, the idealized way we think of it. A relatively small proportion of the boys continued to yeshiva. Everyone went to cheder. Cheder was until you were 12 or 13 years old. And then people went to work. Those who showed promise would continue on to yeshivas and continue learning. And of course some of them became very great. The Tziv was not doing so well. And the Rebbe told his parents that, you know, it's time to look for a job for him. And the parents were upset. They really wanted him to learn, but look, you know, reality is reality, and we're going to have to look for a job. And the Tziv became very upset himself, and he said, please, give me one more chance, and I will show you that I could do it. So he did, and as they say, the rest is history. He says, I could have just as easily been a carpenter or a tailor. I never would have written the Hamek She'ela. But I took advantage of that second opportunity, and that's why there was a special simcha. And here's where I come in. Imagine for a moment that he didn't take advantage of that opportunity. And he became a carpenter. And let's say he became a very good carpenter and he was quite successful and made a nice living. The Netziv was still the Netziv. He was probably a pretty nice fellow. And let's assume that as this carpenter, he lived a very wonderful life. He was Kovei Yitim LaTorah. He gave tzedakah. He was involved in chesed. Got involved in community affairs. And everyone who looked at him as this is such a fine person, a wonderful fellow. And many, many mitzvahs, many, many schusim. Comes up to Shemayim, la'achar me'avesim shana, faces the Bezdin Shalmaila, and they say to him, Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, why didn't you write the Hamek She'ela? Why weren't you the Rosh Yeshiva of Volozhin? And he said, excuse me, I'm a carpenter. Are you sure you don't have a different Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin in mind? But who would be right? The Bez and Shemala, how do we know? Because he did write the Hamek She'ela, he did become the Rosh Yeshiva of Volozhin. Looking at that 12-year-old boy, who would have seen it? It is quite conceivable that if you analyze him by Sher Husham, He really couldn't have done it. But every step you take, you grow, you achieve, you accomplish more. And eventually he became the Nitziv. There's a certain scary side to this, because none of us could ever really know where we stand in this world. We shouldn't get depressed over it. We do the best we can. Kadosh Baruch Hu loves us. Hopefully we're going where we need to go. But none of us really know what we could accomplish, what we could have accomplished. So we have to always try and exert ourselves and never say we give up. But the fact of the matter is that a person's capacity can expand. I think this concept is necessary to understand various other Maimari Chazal. But you know, maybe we'll continue on this thought a little bit next week. I see we're running out of time. I don't want to be accused of keeping people late and having the wives complain. I can't handle that, especially not before Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. So Mir Tashem, we'll continue this thought next week.